Welcome to Senior Power of Maine. Hi, I'm your host, David Neely, and as the past publisher of Maine Seniors Magazine, I know that senior power is Maine's greatest natural resource. Yes, I said senior power. Maine senior citizens are the reason Maine has the highest volunteer rate in the nation. In fact, the involvement of our seniors in community and civic organizations provide the very fabric of our cities and towns, making them great places to live. And Maine is also considered a generous state, despite our low income, with most of our philanthropy coming from, you guessed it, Maine's seniors. This radio program, Senior Power of Maine, will be filled with a combination of entertainment and information for mature audiences only. So if you are a senior partner or work with those who are, you'll want to grab a cup of coffee and enjoy our Senior Power Half Hour. Next, we're going to have with us Dr. Charles Berger, who fortunately has been involved in the healthcare industry for a long time and has helped us digest an article that was a Harvard Medical interview with the head of the NIH National Institute on Health Aging Committee. And Dr. Berger, could you please explain to us how you started with interest in medicine and the healthcare industry from college days over the years?
Well, I actually was sort of a latecomer to medicine. In fact, I was a business administration major in college. But always in the back of my mind, I had thought about going into medicine. After I graduated, I worked for a bit, and I was living in Cleveland at that time, and decided I'd take a crack at going to medical school. The dean of the medical school, Case Western Reserve then, was an interesting fellow. He was a one-man committee. So I talked to him about it. He said, go out and take these courses, which I did, and fortunately was able to avoid the whole pre-med grind that students have to go through at this point in time, and went back and showed him my grades and my MedCap scores, and he said, okay, you're in. So that's how I finally got started in medicine, and I did most of my training in internal medicine in Cleveland. I spent 1 year at Duke. Early on was exposed to a very unusual and dynamic leader in thinking about how we use health information and how we structure it in the more appropriate way by the name of Dr. Lawrence Weed. I spent a lot of time working with him, and the system that he developed was actually put into practice in Camden, Maine. And I had visited that during medical school. When I finished I did 2 years in the Army, where I was actually working on developing algorithms, clinical algorithms for use by the Corman in a general medical clinic. That was during the Vietnam era. So I spent 2 years doing that, and then trying to decide what to do. I saw these two guys here in Maine really doing some interesting things. I had visited the practice while I was in medical school. And so that's how my wife and I wound up in Maine in 1971.
Yes, Dr. Charles Berger, or by his patients known as Charlie, for over 20 years had been nationally recognized as a leader in primary care design focused on workforce development, the use of clinical decision support systems to supplement provider clinical judgment, as well as advancing the use of non-physicians in clinical practice. Very early on, he adopted electronic medical records, introduced first in his practice in 1993. His practice was named one of the 20 most innovative in the country by both the Institute of Medicine and the Dartmouth Center for Clinical Evaluative Sciences, now the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice. In 2013, his practice was one of 30 selected to participate in the LEAP project, Learning from Exceptional Ambulatory Practices, funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation through Group Health Research. His practice was also selected as a case study for primary care by the Harvard Center for Primary Care. Dr. Charlie Berger has also won awards for a variety of things, including, which I think is really great, and I'm going to paraphrase it and call it his bedside manners with patients. He was considered a very kind doctor, understanding, who took his time with patients. You were involved in internal medicine and had some of your own specialties in your own practice at one point, am I right?
Yes, that's true, actually. I mean, I started out as in a partnership, then I went to a solo practice in Bangor, then I joined a medical group that was being formed, primary care medical group that was being formed by Eastern Maine at that time. I wound up as the CEO of that before we merged into a hospital-based practice, where I was there for about 5 years and left there, joined Martin's Point Healthcare, which is where I was at the time I retired. A couple of things that I did that were different. One, I had a strong interest in technology and how the use of medical information systems can help us practice more accurate and better medicine. But I also got very interested in musculoskeletal problems and actually took some osteopathic training courses at at Michigan State University, and wound up, actually, by the time I retired, a fairly significant amount of my practice was dealing with joint problems, back problems, other musculoskeletal problems. It opened up a whole different way of looking at the body for me, which I found extremely satisfying.
So you had a fairly significant amount of elderly patients as well.
You can't practice in Maine without dealing with an elderly population. We are the oldest state in the country, and so yeah, certainly. So a big part of my practice is definitely a geriatric practice.
Which leads us to the reason why we've asked you, with hat in hand, of course, to review an interview between Harvard Medical and the. Gentleman by the name of Hodes, who was the director of the National Institute on Aging, and he apparently has been spending some serious time with the resources, of course, the federal government, as the chair of this committee that basically decided to look at the progress we're making in healthy aging. And I was wondering if you could speak to some of that research.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting research, and based on some long-term studies that came out of a study group of the Baltimore Longitudinal Study on Aging. And I think one of the interesting things is how do we age well? And it has a lot to do, certainly, to how we take care of ourselves, but certainly the importance of, you know, relationships and a positive mind outlook on things.
Well, and it seems in this article they really get down to, well, I guess they'd call it the molecular level, where they're looking at molecular variations and how they differ from person to person. And how the variations get greater with age, but that they look into as I think you're already leading the way with, is the ability for different people to bounce back from medical, physical, and other types of stress, and it does seem that part of their what they're referring to here, and I don't know this, I've always thrown it out because it's just an easy way for me to. Show people how I don't understand what percentage of this stuff might be environmental, what percentage of this stuff might be genetic, and how much we really can have an effect on our own health as we age. Could you speak to some of that?
The article goes into a fair amount of detail of some of the molecular changes that happen. And he particularly focuses on the role of inflammation, and in relationship to cell life and cell health. So that leads to, you know, the logical question is, well, what can we do about that?
and is it, because again, getting back to how much is genetic and how much is environmental or environmental exposures, how much is modifiable? I mean, some of these questions that sort of linger with all of us. I mean, can we really make a significant difference in the quality of our own health as we age?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the old saying, living well is the best revenge. They're fairly simple things. Oftentimes, simple things are hard to do with discipline. Certainly there's been a tremendous amount of work on the effect of exercise on aging and how well we age, and more studies on that coming out all the time. So that can be an important aspect, and it doesn't have to be excessive endurance exercise. Any level of physical exercise is going to benefit us and limit the effects of aging.
And in line with that, you know, we've heard for years that the folks that don't retire, or that even if they do retire, you hear these people who are busier now than they were when they were working. Well, that kind of activity you're suggesting, even if it isn't necessarily running or weightlifting or all these more rigorous forms of exercise, are clearly helpful in keeping the body younger as we age.
Yes, and there's been a lot of biochemical examination of what happens, you know, with regular exercise. You know, it could be gardening. It could be just walking on a daily basis. You know, there's sort of three aspects of
Medicare is so confusing. I didn't know where to get help, but I wouldn't call a plumber in Arizona to fix my pipes in Maine. So don't call some out-of-state 800 number to navigate Medicare plans when your help is right here at home. The Senior Planning Center represents all Medicare Health and Part D plans. They have trusted professional experts in every county. You should call them for your free Medicare review.
Call 223-6565 today. That's 223-6565.
Hi, this is David Neely, and welcome back to Senior Power. And we're talking with Dr. Charlie Berger. In the National Institute of Health Research, it seems that they have at least many institutes devoted one specifically to aging. And as you perhaps know, our very own Senator Collins has been on the committee on aging in the Senate for some time. She also founded the Alzheimer's Caucus and founded the Diabetes Caucus. And in each and every ailment or medical condition that seems to present itself as we age, does have, like I said before, an element of genetic as well as an element of environmental. But if there were any one thing when it comes to how we can control our issues that seems to be pretty prevalent among most studies, and that is it's exercise or activity.
Well, that's correct. I mean, there's a lot of things we can't control, so I think we have to keep the focus on, you know, on the things we can, and exercise is one of those things. You know, it can't be drudgery. People have to find something that works for them, whether it's walking, whether it's yoga, whatever it is, something that you can enjoy while you're doing it and you can do at a consistent level.
And so they as well have come up with that moderate weightlifting, and I guess maybe just resistance type of exercises are also good for strengthening the bones. It's in addition to the muscle and the obvious cardio that may come from such activity, that somehow that as well helps keep the bones strong too. Can you elaborate a little on that?
Oh, yeah, very definitely. I mean, we all, earlier than we would like, we start losing calcium from our bones. Osteoporosis is something that will really hit most people, some obviously much more severe than others, but in many people, it winds up to be a very crippling thing where bones of the spine can crumble because of their weakness. And weightlifting very definitely has an effect on strengthening the bone, limiting calcium loss, and preventing some of those disabilities.
And is it so that the movement actually enhances, I don't know what you'd call it, maybe the fluidity too for your cartilage, tendons, ligaments, everything, just allowing, of course, as you suggested, even the stretching exercises. So I imagine yoga, and there are all kinds of things that that are very helpful there. But it's actually with a little bit of resistance or weight exercising that it really does have an effect on maintaining some calcium level in the bone.
No, absolutely. And you're correct. You do get some, just using light weights, you do get some cardiovascular benefit also.
So to the extent that based on this interview with Harvard Medical and the National Institute on Health Aging, it seems that there aren't, even though they get down to the molecular level and they get into some things that I don't understand, that there really aren't any nuggets that are significantly different than what I think most of us have been told from the medical community for years in regard to keeping active, exercising, like you say, whether it's walking or whatever, can in effect be the most significant way to maintain youth as we age.
Well, it is, and I think that the the other aspect of that is, is psychological, and really the importance of staying engaged socially with friends, any kind of social engagement that brings you in contact with other people, maintaining your relationships with your good friends and family. There's been a greater appreciation over time of what are known as social determinants of health. Medicine and what we do as doctors actually only accounts of about 15 to 20% of health as we know it. A lot of it is behavioral. Some of it is genetic. But these social determinants of health, which are things like, do you have adequate food? Loneliness. Do you have access to transportation? And there's a whole list like that can make a big difference in your health outlook and your health in general. Certainly what we've seen, and many people have read this, I know that the COVID pandemic particularly has caused a lot of emotional stress for people because of the isolation. And the loneliness. We need to be involved with other people and people that we care about.
Excellent point there. In fact, it seems that it brings two things to mind. One, that people who are married or have significant relationships later on in life tend to live longer than those who live alone. And as well, that those who are actively engaged with family, be it their children and grandchildren, tend to live longer. And my guess is that these tendencies are in part due to the fact that they do have that sense of purpose, perhaps are being a little bit more active and more socially engaged, which is part of the reason why even there's recommendations for folks to stay in the workforce longer, even if it's only part-time or doing something you have great passion for, because inevitably that means that you're very engaged, you're staying more active, both of which are very helpful in the aging process. But I'm wondering, they talk about how physiological aging differs from person to person. And I'm wondering if you have the same people doing the same things and it's not necessarily made as much of a difference for another, how much of that really is genetic? And this is, I think, just that ongoing question. And I don't mean to keep bringing this up, but it is that looming question where some people will feel almost fatalistic if they feel that, well, my mom or dad died at such an age or had these particular conditions. And so it doesn't much matter what I do, you know. And of course, what we're saying is that if the exercise does make you feel better, even if you do have a genetic issue that might rear its ugly head, that at least while you are living, you're going to have a higher quality of life with that activity.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, just getting back to the fact we can only control what we control, and we're not all going to live forever. But really, the question is, how well can we live during the time that we have here? I mean, it's certainly possible that medical science is going to be able to do more things at the molecular level, or find out what other things can be done to at least alter that aspect of our aging. But I don't think we can count on that. I think we have to focus on what we can control ourselves.
So the latest studies, now you've probably seen them, I don't know if you have, but were they even thinking that there may be something that can actually, an organism that can actually go in and attack cancer cells that's part of our natural system, or can be introduced into those that don't have as much of this as part of the natural system. And of course, work we can do, you know, so we can see better and hear better and all this. You can do a lot of this bit by bit, but my guess is you still need the fundamentals that come from the exercise, from the activity, from the socialization, because otherwise you still have parts of your system that will be shutting down as we age, right?
Oh, I think no question. I mean, you know, medical science is great. We've got, you know, we've made tremendous breakthroughs, and we're going to see more coming, particularly in treatment of cancer, screening for and treatment of cancer. But I think we're still left to our own devices to get the most out of life.
Well, and I can't thank you enough for joining us on Senior Power. Dr. Charles Berger, who lifelong MD, he's retired, but I guess you're still keeping busy. And am I right that people might even find that you take some of your own advice in keeping active and busy in your retirement years? Would you share some of that with us?
Oh, sure. Yeah, very much so. I mean, I'm active in a bunch of volunteer organizations. I still can, you know, make contributions in the medical field on a voluntary basis. I have been a lifelong exerciser, and I keep that up. I've got a wonderful wife that we're very happy with. We have a terrific family, great friends. So I've been very fortunate. So I think I can reasonably say that I'm living the advice I'm giving to other people.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much, Dr. Charles Berger, for joining us today on Senior Power Radio.
You're very welcome.
So, David, if I want to listen to last week's episode, where do I go to do that?
All you have to do is go to seniorpower.me. That is seniorpower.me, short for Maine, seniorpower.me, and listen to your favorite episode of Senior Power.
I'd be out till 2:45. Would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 60?
few years back, a writer that we had for the Old Main Seniors magazine named Katy Perry wrote something about is and was. This is a lady that at age 90 had called and said, I have to write for your magazine. I'm a senior, you know. And she wrote for us until she was 93. This was one of her submissions, and it's really sort of a treat to read, and it speaks to her philosophy about life altogether. It is called Is and Was. Is and was are two different words. They have a lot to do with time. Let's say today is Monday. We can do whatever we want today because it is here. If today is Monday, then yesterday was Sunday. Today we can't do anything with Sunday. It is over. The only thing yesterday has left may be the rest of Mother's chocolate cake and memories. History is made of the memories of all yesterdays. Tomorrow could be shaped by what you do today. Well, we might call tomorrow maybe because we have no idea what may happen tomorrow. To say you are going to do it is a was that did not happen. To say you are going to do it tomorrow is a maybe, since we do not know what tomorrow will bring. See, time is like a lump of snow. It quickly melts. We welcome this in the spring, and we should with life. The snow melts and leaves just puddles of water. As with life, we have puddles and an entire ocean of memories. And that is what is left of what was. There are a lot of is's and was's all around us. It was winter, and now it is spring. Walking along the shore, we see a graceful seagull, which is here now. Farther along, we see a long-legged crab crawling sideways to reach deeper water. The crab is here too. Are we walking along with today? Yes, it is. We realize the difference between is and was, and yet sometimes we try to do something about what was. But what was is gone. As with all living things, we have is and was. So it is with life. We have the memories of yesterday, and it is okay to cherish those memories of what was. However, yesterday is no longer something we can work with, and since tomorrow has yet to be, we can only depend on what is today. Use it wisely. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Senior Power.
My insurance kept going up and up and up and up.
I was getting a lot of mail about Medicare.
I could never have navigated through the loopholes.
Mainers across the state are finding help at Senior Planning Center, which represents all major Medicare health plans.
Senior Planning Center was a lifesaver.
Senior Planning Center did it all.
Gave me all my options and signed me up with what I needed within an hour.
Call 223-6565. 223-6565. Help when it matters most. SeniorPlanningCenter.com.